Keith. Now, I love Easter. I think Easter is the greatest day of the year for me. I love Easter. It's so much better than Christmas. Don't you agree, children? No, you don't agree. No, fair enough. I love Christmas too. I love Christmas. I love remembering at that Christmas time that this was the extraordinary day when God became a boy, a little child, born into his own world. Yeah, we love Christmas. But Christmas has got so much other stuff wrapped around it, hasn't it? And I know that's a lot of the fun. But Easter, just love Easter. Why do we love Easter so much? Because Easter is the day when we learn with confidence that everything that Jesus said about himself is true. Might not have been without Easter, as it were, but Easter tells us everything that Jesus said about himself is true, that he really is God's one and only Son, that he really did give his life for you and me on a cross and for the sins of the world, that he really did rise again on the third day, and that he really does summon people, call us to follow him today, to put our trust in him, and to find, as we do so, new life, life to the full, life far more wonderful than we'd ever known it before. That's why I love Easter, and I'm sure the same is true of many of us. Now, it all began, as we heard in that reading, when some women, on the first Easter morning, that first Easter Sunday morning, went to the tomb of Jesus. All the Gospels talk about it in slightly different ways, but they all say that some women went to the tomb of Jesus on that first Easter morning. And understandably, they were upset. Just 2 days before, they had seen this man whom they'd followed and loved and listened to, and they had seen him horribly put to death on a cross on the day we call Good Friday. So they were upset. But they went in the early hours of the morning to anoint his body with spices and things just to show respect and so on. And they were upset already. And then when they got to the tomb, they were all the more upset because somebody had taken the big stone that was in front of the tomb and rolled it to the side, and the body wasn't there anymore. So they were upset to begin with. And then they got more upset because it seemed absolutely clear that somebody had taken the body away. And if it wasn't bad enough for him to die, then for his body to be stolen, I mean, that's the limit, isn't it? It's bad enough when death happens. But then to make it worse, when my grandmother died many, many years ago, it was in the days when you put a little notice in the paper and you gave the address of the lady. Well, people don't do that anymore. And fair enough, because a day or two after my grandmother had died, some people burgled her house and stole her bits and pieces because they discovered the old lady had died, and so they went in and took her stuff. It's bad enough having death, but having it sort of made even worse like that. And the women are so upset, and they think somebody's stolen the body. Now, that actually is what the Roman guards, decided to say had happened. There were guards around the tomb. Pilate, the governor, had put guards around the tomb to make sure that nobody did steal the body, and then it had gone. And so they hatched a little plot saying, well, what we'll say is that while we were asleep, his disciples came and took the body away while we were asleep. That's a bit odd, isn't it? Ladies and gentlemen of the orchestra, did any of you sleep last night? You put a hand up if you slept last night. Trevor Clarkson here. What happened while you were asleep last night? You haven't a clue. James Niblett in the back row? You not a clue? Why haven't you a clue? Because you were asleep. So people who testify to what happened while they were asleep are pretty dumb, aren't they? You don't expect anyone to believe that the disciples took him away while they were asleep. They were obviously feeling really bad about it, but that's a pretty useless story, isn't it? No, the angel that we heard about in the story said something else to the women. Why is the body not here? This young man dressed in white said to them, I know that you are looking for Jesus who was crucified. He is not here. He has risen just as he said he would. Come and see the place where he laid. And I think that was probably the moment at which the women at the tomb began to dawn on them that they had stumbled on something infinitely more wonderful that was beyond their wildest dreams. They just began to realize they had found something here beyond their wildest dreams. And do you know what happened to them? Has happened to people for 2,000 years since and continues to happen today and will for years to come. As people discover, as I remember discovering when I was 18 years old, it really is true. Jesus rose from the dead, and this opens something beyond my wildest dreams. The really sad thing is, so many people today just don't even know that that's what Christianity is about. I think it's about other boring things like, I don't know, being good and praying and things that people don't want to do. But no, we discover that Jesus is alive and calls us to follow him. And that is very wonderful. Now, those first Christians, everybody's agreed, the Christians, they weren't liars. They didn't make this story up and lie about it. That's a silly idea, because if you've, suppose you've just, you've made a story up, told a lie about something, and somebody says, well, look, until you admit it that you're lying, and if you don't admit it and tell me the truth instead, I'll cut your head off, what would you do? I think probably I'd own up and say, no, it's all right, I was lying. But the early Christians, they wouldn't do that. They would not. They would go to the death. They would rather be killed by their enemies than deny that Jesus was raised from the dead. They were not liars, but somebody might say, well, perhaps they just made a mistake. I mean, those women, perhaps they went to the wrong tomb. I mean, it was early, they were upset, you know, emotional women in early hours, dark and so on. Of course, that's understandable. They could go to the wrong tomb and make a mistake. And so all the time Jesus was there, he was just in the tomb next door, and perhaps that's what happened. Well, that's a thought, isn't it? Story time. Children, if you want to come, if you can't see, if you want to come and sit here, got a little story for you. It's a true story. About a very long time ago, when I was a young man. That's what the story's going to be about. And while you're coming, we're just going to see a picture of a building up on the screen. And I want to know what this building is. I'll give you four options. It could be the British Embassy in Beijing. The British Embassy in Beijing, capital of China. Or it could be the Goring Hotel in London. Or it could be Central Railway Station, Glasgow. Or it could be the building that used to be there until Donald Trump knocked it down and put Trump Tower Trump in its place. Now, which do you think of those it might be? Could be... You think it was the last one? You think it was the Donald Trump, the building that Donald Trump knocked down in order to build Tower Trump Tower, or whatever they call it? Do you think, who else thinks that? Yeah? Not very many. We've got some enthusiasts here. Who else thinks that it might be the British Embassy in Beijing? Do you think it might be the British Embassy in Beijing? Or the, any votes for that? Or the Goring Hotel? Oh, it looks like you've all stayed there. You must know, like William and Kate. No, or who thinks it might be the Central Station in Glasgow? Yes, well, most people aren't brave enough to vote at all. But most people said Glasgow Central Station. You're absolutely right. Now, I've got a little story to tell you about that. I've got a little story. Now, I'll do the talking, please. I've got a little story to tell about Glasgow Central Station. It goes back to a long, long time when I was a young man. I remember it well. I was going to go on holiday to Skye. The Isle of Skye is a long, long way away. It's at least 600 miles and a long journey. You sort of go north up England, go on and on, hit Scotland, then go over the water and you get to Skye. Never been before. I was going to go with friends, about 12, 14 of us, all single at the time. We're going to have a holiday together. And the way it was going to happen was like, for me, was like this. I was going to go with my friend Hugh. Now, I was living in London. Hugh was living in Bedford. Hugh had a car. I did not have a car. Agreement? Hugh will go and stay with friends near Glasgow, and I will take the overnight train, not a sleeper, not luxurious, but a thing called the night rider, and I will take the train, and I will arrive right here at Glasgow Central Station, 6:30 in the morning, and I will go to the station hotel, and I will wait for Hugh, who will come and collect me, and then we'll get in the car, and he will drive the two of us to Skye. Easy enough? Yeah, no problem. Can't possibly go wrong. 6:30, Glasgow Central Station. That's when my train arrives. That's the one Hugh's going to meet. And then we'll go on together from there. Okay? Now, what happened was, I arrived, and I got out of the train. And I went to Glasgow Central Station. That's the train. I go make my way to the station hotel. And I sit there, and Hugh isn't around. So I think, no problem. I'll wait for him. So I wait for him, and I carry on waiting for him, and I'm still waiting for him, and it's 7:30, and then it's 8:00, and then it's 8:30, and I think, well, fair enough, traffic may be bad or something, and I begin to get a bit hungry, so I say, well, I think I'll have breakfast, nice hotel, so I have a hotel breakfast. Time moves on, I continue waiting, I've promised I won't go anywhere else, I'll be at the station hotel, so I stay put. And then it's coffee time. And it's nice coffee. And then before very long, it's lunchtime. Still no sign of Hugh. And I begin to get worried. And I go to the station hotel desk and I say, would you mind ringing this number? It's his boss. Has there been an accident or something on the way? And I get through to the boss. No accident. No, everything's fine. Well, the afternoon goes on. I think, well, this is very worrying. Then I leave a message with the porter at the hotel and go for a little walk around Glasgow. And I discover people in Glasgow are very, very friendly. Anybody here from Glasgow? You're very welcome. You are especially friendly people. Give a little clap to the Glaswegians among us. They are just wonderfully friendly. I don't wonder us that they're all so nice and friendly. I'd love to live in Glasgow. But I was actually at the station hotel and wanting to go to Skye. I didn't want to stay in Glasgow. Anyway, there was no sign of you at all. And then it was night time. I had a bit of supper. I thought, well, I'll have to stay in the hotel. So I had to book myself into the hotel. And it cost me the outrageous sum of £18 for the night. £18, outrageously expensive. No word from you at all. The next morning, I got up. I had breakfast. I caught the train to Malaga. I got on a boat which took me from Malaga across the water to Portree. I got a bus from Portree to Port Nolong. And I walked with my luggage from Port Nolong to the cottage where we were all going to be staying, the house we were going to be staying, and there was Hugh. Hugh was covered in bandages because he's a great mountaineer, and Skye's got wonderful mountains, and as soon as he got there, he rushed up a mountain, fell off, damaged his leg, and spent the rest of the holiday in plaster looking at other people water skiing. Well, it was an interesting moment, actually, when I arrived and Hugh was there. There was some sort of tension in the air. And I said, Hugh, you never came. And he said, I did, and you weren't there. I thought, that's very odd. I was there. I never moved, I promise. Now, let's just reenact this from Hugh's point of view. Here is Glasgow Central Station Hotel. Anya, please. Is it here already? Where's it gone? Oh, I'm putting it up, am I? Okay. Right. Station Hotel here. Okay. Now, train arrives. We've got a train to arrive. There we are. Hugh actually gets there early. Hugh goes and meets the train. Where's my friend Hugh? Ah, here you come, Hugh. Hugh is very early, actually. He's sort of early, didn't want to. He's so keen to get to Skye. He thought, oh, that'd be nice and early. So Hugh comes and he goes to the station and he meets the train, waves at the train. Hello, train. He looks for Giles. No sign of Giles. People come off the train. Hugh scratches head. Waits for a few minutes. No sign of Giles. Hugh goes and settles down at the station buffet. The station buffet is not the station hotel. 5 minutes after he was sat down at the station buffet, Giles emerges from the train. Because it was very cold in the train overnight, I got my sleeping bag out because the heating wasn't working. And it took me a few minutes to wrap it up. So I came off the train when pretty much everybody else had already got off it. Hugh, by that time, had gone to the station buffet. I went and sat in the station hotel, which is about 100 yards away. Here I am. Hugh was surprised. An hour and a half later, Hugh went to meet the next train. There's another train. Was Giles on it? No, because Giles was sitting in the hotel buffet. Sorry, station hotel. Thank you. I'm getting confused myself now. I was in the station hotel. Hugh then went at about 10:30 to meet another train. In fact, Hugh spent the whole morning meeting trains. He kept on getting up and waving at trains, looking for me, and there was no sign. And by about midday, Hugh thought, this is ridiculous. I want to go and climb a mountain. I'm off. And I spent the rest of the time in the Glasgow Station Hotel and got to Skye sometime late the following afternoon. All because of a simple mistake. Somebody says, why didn't you use your mobile? Mobile? People hadn't heard of mobiles in 1983. At least I hadn't. I think you'd get one about the size of one of these things. So lug it around in your suitcase. No. Just simple mistake. Big consequences from just looking in the wrong place. And people say, well, that's probably what the women did on that first Easter morning. Just went to the wrong tomb. They went there. Jesus was here all the time. That's all that happened. How do we know that's not true? Because the man said to them, He is not here. I know that you're looking for Jesus, who was crucified. He is not here. He has risen. Come and see the place where he lay. There was no doubt this was the right tomb, and Jesus was not in it. He is not here. He has risen. What a moment for them to discover that. What a moment for us to discover that when we do. A happy day. Easter is a happy day. We know that Jesus washed our sin away. How do we know that he washed our sin away? Because he died on Good Friday to wash our sin away. How do we know that it's true? Because on Easter Day, he rose again. Happy day. Now, one more question. Who knows what happened in 480 BC? One of those nice winds who were leading us in prayer just now. Do you remember what happened in 480 BC? Were you around at the time? 480 BC? That was very unkind, wasn't it? Other members of the Monday Fellowship? No, 480 BC? No. All right. Anybody remember? No, well, I didn't know until I looked this up. The Battle of Salamis. Here it is. Well, there you go, so it might have been. Battle of Salamis, 480 BC, was a very, very significant, one of the most important battles ever fought anywhere, land or sea. This one was at sea, and it's important because at Salamis, which is near Athens, the Greeks defeated the Persians. And you think, so what? Well, so a lot, actually, because the Persians were the big cheeses of the day. They were sweeping their way across. They were going to overrun Western Europe and so on. And this was the point at which the Greeks, who had a much smaller navy, defeated the much larger navy of the Persians, and the Persians then began to retreat. Why is that important? Because it meant that for the next several hundred years, Greek culture flourished. And it would never have happened without this battle. Greek culture flourished. That affected Rome. Rome flourished. That affected the whole of Western Europe. It affected Britain. And our country today would look and feel very different if it hadn't been for the Battle of Salamis. Well, there you are. What do you know? Just shows that things that happened a very long time ago can actually have a big effect on us today, even if we don't know it. Now, somebody might say, well, fair enough. Big battle. Lots of people understand that. Yes, of course, battles, armies, cultures, I understand all that. But here you're just talking about one man whom you say rose from the dead, and somebody like Richard Dawkins, that scientist man, will say, well, it's trivial. It's so trivial. You've got to deal with real things that matter. He says the resurrection of Jesus is trivial. He could not be more wrong. What is different? Somebody might rightly say, well, if Jesus rose from the dead, so what? What difference does it make? And the answer is, it makes a huge difference. And let Jesus himself give the answer. We had what he said in the last few verses of that second reading. What does Jesus say about his own rising from the dead? It says two things. First of all authority in the world belongs to Jesus. Jesus has all authority in this world. He said, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Now, only God can talk like that. And Jesus says it about himself. All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. He says it, and the empty tomb proves that it is true. People sometimes say, all religions are all the same, are they? Of course they're not. This is the only one which has at its heart somebody who died and rose from the dead. Back at home, sometimes we sort of find a piece of clothing or book or something, and we say to one another, anybody know who this belongs to? And someone says, yes, it belongs to so-and-so. Maybe it happens at school or at the workplace. Whose is this coffee mug? Oh, it's yours. Yeah, wash it up, please. Yeah. Who does this belong to? And we look around at the world and say, who does this belong to? It doesn't seem sometimes as if it belongs to anyone, as if it's just going wildly out of control. And the empty tomb says, no, this world and all authority in this world belongs to the risen Lord Jesus. The second thing that Jesus says is not only that he has all authority in heaven and on earth, but that he is for everyone. And that follows, really, from the first. He is for you and for me. He is for everyone, beginning with us individually, first of all. That's a wonderful thing to discover, that we're not here for no reason at all. We are not here to try and work our own way through life independently on our own, making the best of what comes our way. as if there were nobody else around, nobody else there. No, we're here to find new life in Jesus. He is for everyone. And that begins with me and you individually. But not just for us individually, but for the world. And Jesus says, go therefore and make disciples. This is the most wonderful thing to discover, that this is why we are on this planet, is to live with Jesus Christ, the risen Lord, as King and Saviour. It is for everyone to discover. I've got questions for you as we draw to a close this morning. The answers will be on the screen. And each question begins with the same, each one begins with these three words. Do you believe? Do you believe? Do you believe? Now, maybe there is someone here this morning, a bit like those women that first Easter morning. And you may just be beginning to realize that in all this, you're stumbling on something beyond your wildest dreams. If so, what a wonderful day this will be to look back on for you.